The Tom Woods Show, episode 2244.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Folks, if you enjoy the Tom Woods Show, it's time to go to the next level. And next level, Tom Woods, is libertyclassroom.com. This is where my friends and I teach all the stuff you did not get in your conventional education, history, economics, and more, the way it ought to be taught, with all the content they left out or distorted. Check it out at libertyclassroom.com. Hey, folks, Tom Woods here. Stefan Lavera is with us once again. We're going to talk about the FTX fiasco with him. Stefan, of course, you have a podcast. Can you talk about your role in the Bitcoin world, let's say?
Sure. Well, first of all, thank you for having me back, Tom. I am known in the Bitcoin world as a podcaster mainly. I also do a lot of educational work. So basically, the podcast is known for interviewing a lot of the leading people in the Bitcoin world. And then I also work at Swan Bitcoin, where basically we are a brokerage firm and we also do Bitcoin education. So people who want to buy Bitcoin, they can buy Bitcoin with us. And I also write some articles here and there for Bitcoin Magazine.
Okay, very good. Now, in terms of FTX, I think I initially thought I would probably just skip this topic just because by the time I'm getting to it, it's a little bit late and so many other people have commented on it. But it seems like it's a significant enough issue that I don't think I can bypass it altogether. Now, I have a number of questions I want to ask you about it, but can we start off with having you explain to a layman exactly what FTX is or was?
Sure. So FTX was a cryptocurrency exchange. I mean, it is, but it is now under a bankruptcy proceeding. And they were known for having come up extremely quickly. Now, some people say that's almost suspicious in a way, that the origin story behind where all this came from. But let me sort of step back a second. They were a cryptocurrency exchange. Now, they were an international exchange based in the Bahamas, incorporated in Antigua. If I understand correctly, they also had an FTX US entity. They were known for being a trader-focused exchange, let's say. Now, as many people know, they recently had this massive, massive blow-up, and they're all over the news. The founder, Sam Bankman-Fried, also known as SBF, he was a big proponent of effective altruism. He was known for donating all this money to the Democratic Party, and he seemingly is evading jail or arrest at the same time that all of these customers have lost all of this money, and there has been what looks like to be a Ponzi scheme, basically. A Ponzi scheme larger than Charles Ponzi could have run.
This fiasco is being cited as a reason that we need more regulation of crypto. And Kevin O'Leary, the investor, who is actually named in this class action lawsuit that's been brought, appeared, I don't know where, he made some video in which he said, I'm going to Washington and demanding regulation. What do you want to say about that?
Well, at the same time, fraud is already illegal, you know? So some of these things, it just becomes like, what are we going to do? Make it double illegal? Like, the reality of it is also that people are, in a sense, not taking accountability for putting their coins on a platform and leaving them with FTX. And for all of these venture capitalists and investors who unfortunately did not do enough due diligence in their research and their study of what was happening. I also think it's fair to point out that there was a bit of a mania, right? That we've seen this in the broader quote-unquote crypto markets over the years, that there are these phases of mania. And at this time, venture capitalists are all running to invest. Customers are totally ignoring all the warning signs. I don't know how much, you know, what regulation was even going to stop this, to be honest.
In a way, this reminds me a bit of the financial crisis of 2008, because then we were told by so many people, in fact, I'm sure many of the same people, that what we needed was more regulation. If we'd had more regulation, this wouldn't have happened. But when people say that, they are attributing to regulators who are just more or less workmanlike drones, magical powers that they do not possess or magical insights that they do not have. What's the major regulator of the banking system in the U.S., the Federal Reserve. And leading up to 2008, Federal Reserve officials couldn't find a thing wrong with anything. So how does it help to give them more money or something? And what, so they can say their inaccurate predictions more loudly? I don't see that that does us any good. Also, on the eve of the crisis, if you combine state and federal level institutions, we had 115 regulatory bodies overseeing the banking system.
Right.
So I'm supposed to believe that if only we had had 116, one extra one, then we wouldn't have had this problem. It's just crazy. You know, it's kids who graduate at the bottom of their class trying to keep an eye on kids who graduate at the top. It just doesn't really work.
Right.
At the same time, it should be admitted, though, that there's more danger with Bitcoin than there is with fiat money. I don't worry that my money sitting in a bank is going to disappear because some jerk is in charge of the bank. I don't have to really worry about that all that much, realistically. But with Bitcoin, apparently I do have to worry about that, or at least with Bitcoin that's not resting on an exchange.
Right. So I think it's fair to say that while arguably what happened here was already fraud, and it could even potentially be securities fraud, that there are securities tokens that were basically printed out of thin air and have been inflated. And to the point, it's that doing all of these quote-unquote cryptocurrencies that have unfortunately made it easier for as a scam vector almost. And now it is probably fair to point out that FTX operating as an offshore exchange, at least the FTX international component, operating offshore arguably made it easier for them to go and do all of these crazy things and offer all these crazy yield products that some of the US domestic operations could not do. So for example, the likes of Coinbase and Gemini and other large US based exchanges, they couldn't do or offer some of the same products that were available in terms of FTX. And so there was this broader mania. And I think a lot of that comes down to rehypothecation, a lot of coming down to fake valuations, right? There was just a lot of nonsense. And it was at a time when there was this crazy frenzy. Everyone wanted yield, and FTX and Alameda were providing that. And so there's a lot of dishonesty that went on in here. There were a lot of tokens that basically, it's probably worthwhile explaining this as well, because as an example, there were a bunch of tokens where, for example, FTX had their own exchange coin called FTT. So basically, they created their own coin. They keep some of it. They sell some of it to the market. And then they even use some of this coin as collateral for loans. And so the whole thing is just this massive house of cards. And fundamentally, there's just been rehypothecation on top of rehypothecation. And there's all these different dynamics that go into it. But fundamentally, what happened with FTX is that a lot of customers and even a lot of the companies that they invested in, the rumor is that they were told, hey, this XYZ company, if you want this bailout, you need to put your funds on our platform. And then they would sort of use that to go on and on and on and keep levering up, levering up, levering up. And until now, the whole Ponzi is coming and falling down. And so I think what's required is people to be vigilant and to obviously hold their own keys to their coins in their own hardware wallet or signing device, and to really be careful, to heed the warnings. And I think it's one of those things where, as the industry would look at the Bitcoiners who were saying, no, avoid these altcoins, avoid the yield products, just hold your own keys. And they would look at the Bitcoiners and say, oh, look, you boomer Bitcoiners, look at me, I'm getting all this yield. And now after we've seen this Luna implosion, we've seen 3RS Capital blow up, Celsius is blowing up, BlockFi blow up, Voyager, all of these companies are blowing up, we're going into bankruptcy. And so it's just been a crazy year or so of an unwind. This big mania is now unwinding.
I think one factor here is that for people who aren't particularly tech savvy, there is without a doubt a convenience aspect to having your Bitcoin on an exchange.
Sure.
Because then in that case, the only thing you need to do is to get and remember a username and password as you would with any other website. And even though a lot of these folks may realize on some level that self-custody is the better way to go, they don't know how to do it. And maybe they worry that if they do the wrong thing as they try to get their Bitcoin off the exchange, maybe it could just disappear into the ether. And so they're afraid to do it. They don't know where to start. So I think a kind of an inertia builds up. So are you able to direct people to a resource that's user-friendly that can walk them through this?
Sure. So we offer a lot of resources over at swan.com. We have various blog posts that explain easy ways to self-custody, things like this. Now, you make a fair point that I understand there's this inertia, right? So people think of it like a bank account or a brokerage where they just think, oh, my coins or my money is there and, you know, I just trust them with it. But fundamentally, we have to remember it's not just a username and password. As an example, people can have insecure passwords and then get hacked. And so then really, when you think about it, oh, actually, you need to have some kind of two-factor authentication. So for example, where they do an SMS or they have an authenticator app. And now you need to think about securing that or having that access to that. And so by the time you add all of these things up, it sort of gets us to a point where, look, yes, it is a hard message to sell, one of personal responsibility and accountability. And I know even from a libertarian perspective, we probably face a similar issue as well, because some of us are trying to argue for less statism and more personal accountability and personal responsibility. And so that really is the flip side. I think if we want to have financial sovereignty, we fundamentally cannot avoid the personal responsibility aspect of this. And so I would argue, even if you imperfectly self-custody, I think it's become very clear that you are better off to do that than to risk leaving your funds on the exchange or with a custodian, especially when it comes to things like Bitcoin. So fundamentally, I would say people should just start with a basic phone wallet, something like Moon, MUUN.com, and then maybe move up to a hardware device, something like a cold card, or people have a Trezor or a Ledger, something like this. So that's kind of the progression I would give for people. But fundamentally, it comes down to personal responsibility and personal accountability.
Speaking of that, should some of these celebrities or an investor like Kevin O'Leary, should these people have known something was wrong? Was it evident? Were there red flags that they should have perceived?
That's a good question. I think there were warning signs in certain aspects that it didn't fully unwind. I would say maybe someone like Kevin, maybe he shouldn't have been expected to sort of understand the nuance and the detail in this world. It's kind of a bit opaque in certain aspects, and he's not a specialist in this area. But I think what happened is, coming back to that unwind theme, I think what happened is people went out further and further, taking more and more risk because they wanted more yield. And so if we zoom out to the broader quote-unquote crypto world, what we saw was, I think, the implosion of Luna, right? So that was basically another Ponzi. And as that imploded, there were other ripple effects and other people who got exposed. Then we saw Three Arrows Capital, one of the big funds in the space, blow up. Then we saw Celsius blow up. Then we saw BlockFi blow up. And at that point, FTX was bailing out, supposedly, BlockFi and Voyager. But it seems now that really what was going on, it's not that SBF was the new JP Morgan. It's actually that he was trying to shore up his own position in FTX. Now, and just as we speak, BlockFi have now come out with their own bankruptcy proceedings also, because their bailout was contingent on FTX. And so obviously FTX losing the funds there made it really difficult. I think fundamentally what we saw though, and look, I think it is worthwhile pointing out, I mean, some of this is comical. There are some of these things that are coming out in the wash. So for example, in FTX's bankruptcy case, it's seen here that employees were submitting expense reimbursements over a chat and a manager would accept or reject with an emoji. With an emoji. Like, what kind of company is running like this? And so fundamentally, there was a massive failure of corporate controls. There were related party loans. Alameda, the fund, gave SBF a $1 billion loan. There was bad record keeping. There were no board meetings. There was no cash management system. There were improper employment records. And there were employees where it wasn't clear how much time they were spending on FTX versus how much time on Alameda. And so there were, I guess, some warning signs for people who were doing due diligence. But unfortunately, I think what happened is the mania stopped people from really being able to do that. And I'll give another example. What happens for some of these venture capital investors is they see a lot of other people come into the round, and then they're worried that, oh, if I don't get in, I'll miss my spot. And let's say with some time pressure from the likes of SBF or others who are raising funds, they'll say, look, we need an answer. We need you to put your money in. And so I think that aspect of it could help explain why some of these venture capitalists and others were not doing the right level of diligence that they perhaps should have been doing. I think what happened for a lot of the customers of these platforms also is just this mindset of, oh, we're in a very low interest rate environment. I want some yield. Oh, look at the yield I'm getting on some of these platforms, on the various different things. And what was happening is there was almost a kind of reputation laundering going on, because what people would do is, instead of saying, oh, I'm going to go directly punt on some of these random coins or punt on some of these yield farming and so on, they would put their money with the likes of Celsius or BlockFi. And in turn, Celsius is the one putting funds out with, let's say, Luna and some of these other coins and platforms. And so fundamentally, a lot of people just were not recognizing the nature of this space. The nature of this space, right? The kind of real first rule of the game is not your keys, not your coins. And fundamentally, what happened is a lot of people wanted to be able to have that yield. And so because of that, I think that was what drove some of this mania. Then that mania in turn drove all of this crazy investment and really just inadequate research and care given to the risk level.
How does all this affect the price of Bitcoin?
So yes, Bitcoin is down. So basically from the top to where we are today as we speak, it's around $16,000. So we're talking 75, 76%, something in that range of a drawdown from the top to the bottom. Assuming this is the bottom, we don't know. So I think it's fair to say that Bitcoin moves through these cycles and it has been through these before. 2013, it's been in 2017. It's had these 80% drawdowns on the way. And so I'm not that worried longer term. I believe this is actually the time when people who have unfortunately gotten wrecked, who lost money or for whatever reason got it down right now, this is the time that they actually look into the ethos of Bitcoin. They look into the technology that's being built. They see the peer-to-peer aspect. They see, oh, wow, look at all the ways that people are building out technology and there are builders and educators still pressing on. So I'm not that worried overall. I just see it as part of the cycle. I see it as, well, this is just part of how it works, is that in the crazy heat of the mania, people come in really not understanding what it is they're buying or doing. And then as the market comes down, as it unwinds, there are people who then stop and learn. So I think that's at a high level how I'm seeing it.
Incidentally, I think you may have tweeted about this a little bit, but can you say something about the fawning media coverage of this guy? I rather doubt I would get that kind of coverage if I did the sorts of things that he's accused of doing, or if you did them. But we're getting these stories about, oh, he was donating money to he had a foundation to prevent pandemics, which I think we can be certain would have recommended all the wrong things. So I do not regret the passing of that. But, oh, he was trying to prevent pandemics and now this is going to put a dent in his operation. I mean, what? What? So can you say something about that?
Well, I think you might be onto something there, Tom. I think fundamentally, SBF and FTX made a lot of donations to the so-called right people. Of course, Tom, it's important to curry favor with as many politicians in power as possible, right? And I think in certain cases, he was an investor in some of these media companies who then purport to cover this in a neutral way. And maybe they're not so good about their disclosure of their interest. And I think even Elon Musk checked one of these companies and tweeted responding to them saying, hey, actually, we should just make sure you've got this disclosure here. But fundamentally, we've seen a very fawning coverage of SBF. They've said things like, oh, he won't be able to, as you said, donate for these various causes. It's funny as well that he was so public about this whole effective altruism thing. But at the same time, there was one journalist who managed to have a DM conversation with him on Twitter, where basically he admitted that basically, and I'm just going to quote the exact words, he says, quote unquote, by this dumb game we woke Westerners play where we say all the right shibboleths and so everyone likes us, right? And that's one thing he was saying. And basically to this question about whether FTX was loaning customer funds to Alameda, who then gambled with it and took directional bets, his answer was, oh, well, we thought Alameda had enough collateral to cover it, right? And so you can see how these people are just playing fast and loose with the truth. And unfortunately, the media is not, well, at least the corporate media or the mainstream media are not giving this proper scrutiny. They are not scrutinizing the actual facts of the case. And I think in many cases, it's that in some cases, I think they gave so much fawning coverage on the way up so that now they almost got bought into it. Now they don't want to be revealed as having not been doing the right level of scrutiny on the way up. And so now that it's on the way down, they're giving him the kitty gloves, right? And they're not really treating him with the actual scrutiny that he should be under. And I mean, it's, to be honest, it's a huge question mark as to why he's not being arrested or being extradited at this point. And I mean, it seems that the New York Times and Aaron, I believe his name's Aaron Sorkin, the journalist for this event, Dealbook, are happy to host him and interview him on stage. So what kind of lesson is that sending to people when, let's say, the average person who commits this kind of thing, you know they're going to jail for a long time if they do any of this kind of thing. But if you do it at a massive scale and you donate to the so-called right people, with SBF being the second largest donor to the Democratic Party, but with FTX and various associated people donating both to the Democratic Party and to the Republicans, what kind of message is that sending to people? Just do the crime big enough and donate to the right people and you won't get in trouble?
Yeah, I mean, what other explanation could there be for why he's still walking around and a lot of people just treating him like somebody you might invite to a conference or whatever? It's absolutely crazy. Hey, folks, quick sponsor message via Woods here. Let me tell you something. With Christmas coming, there are a lot of gifts you can get people that they're absolutely going to hate. But there are fantastic and unique gifts that nobody else is going to get them that they're going to love. Why not get one of those? And an excellent, excellent gift idea this Christmas is a big old box of Omaha steaks. The Woodses have been eating Omaha steaks for well over a dozen years. We love the convenience, the value, and the quality. Absolutely delicious, and what a great gift idea. The steak experts at Omaha Steaks have put together special curated gift packages that will help make you a Christmas hero. So go to omahasteaks.com and use code WOODS at checkout to get $30 off your order. Send an assortment of mouth-watering favorites guaranteed to impress, like the legendary Butcher's Cut Filet Mignon, air-chilled boneless chicken, ultra-juicy burgers. The burgers are ultra-juicy, and even easy-to-prepare comfort meals that are ready in a flash. Omaha Steaks is ready to ship your order right away, so shop early and beat the shipping rush. Go to omahasteaks.com and use promo code WOODS at checkout to get that extra $30 off your order. Minimum order may be required. I have heard it said that FTX looks like, and I don't know how you can speculate on this, but it looks like a giant money laundering operation for the deep state. Now, are you willing to go that far?
I mean, potentially. I mean, certainly there are connections there in terms of his parents and connections with the Democratic Party. I think, though, in this case, I don't know enough to sort of go further into that particular area, but I think it seems to me more like the simple answer is just that he failed to capture, right? He was trying to perform this regulatory capture. And so, in a way, he was trying to donate to the right causes, have this very public persona, and he was trying to do that regulatory capture play where you pull the ladder up after yourself, right? So the idea is you climb up the ladder and then you kick the ladder away so that nobody else can compete with you. And so even as recent as October, he was out here talking about how he wanted certain forms of regulation and he wanted to ban some of his competition. And in a sense, this also brought up some of the beef between him and CZ, who's the founder of Binance. Now they are basically the 600-pound gorilla in the room, because I think SBF's interests were almost cutting against everybody else. And so I think that may have also spurred some of this antagonism between the two. And that also, I guess, was part of the story of SBF and FTX coming unwound, because CZ and Binance had a share in FTX. And what happened basically is SBF was criticizing CZ, and then after all the Luna blow up, which was another cryptocurrency that blew up, I think CZ and Binance were saying, well, hang on, we're sitting on this big hoard of FTT, this other guy's exchange token, and we want to start selling some of it. And that was actually what tipped off some of this whole cascading scenario, because as the exchange token FTT was going down, there was a lot of panic, there was a bank run, and at this point, withdrawals got paused. And so then there was all this big drama publicly about it. So my explanation would be more like SBF and FTX were trying to, let's say, capture the system, or at least be buddy-buddy with the regulators and have their way. But certainly I wouldn't rule out a deep state connection.
It's just insane. This world we're living in, just insane. Do you have any thoughts about, have you looked into this class action lawsuit? And does somebody like a Kevin O'Leary have reason to think he might be in serious trouble?
I haven't looked into the class action lawsuit. I mean, there's so many different threads and angles. I haven't looked into that particular thread.
Okay. Presumably, at some point, something has to happen to SBF. Right? This weirdo phony war situation where we're all kind of looking around at each other like, what? We know some shoe has to drop at some point. I mean, doesn't it? Something has to happen to it.
Well, I mean, and that's the crazy thing in this quote-unquote crypto world. The crazy thing is, seemingly, some of these people who are operating all of these crazy schemes, they seem to just be walking free. And some of them apparently are going to Dubai, even Carolyn Ellison. So she was the head of Alameda and apparently used to be in a relationship with SBF. And so apparently she's fleeing Hong Kong to go to Dubai. And we're hearing that Kyle Davies and Su Xu of 3 Arrows Capital, I'm hearing rumors that they're looking to raise a new fund, even after 3 Arrows Capital blew up and there's all of these people who are these creditors who still haven't got their money. So we are in a clown world, Tom, and I think everyone has to really try to protect themselves, hold their own assets, hold your own keys. And what I would say is, in the same way that Bernie Madoff's Ponzi doesn't mean the stock market is all bad, I think it's the same kind of idea that just because FTX and all of these nonsense altcoin exchanges and providers and platforms have struggled is not to, let's say, cast a black mark against Bitcoin itself. I think Bitcoin itself, there is a genuine real-world use. And I think it's fundamentally just that we're going through a bear cycle.
Well, yes, in terms of bull and bear, you're right. But it seems like there are giant bears everywhere in a more colloquial sense of just bad, bad, nasty actors who, I guess, maybe when something really does blow up in a big way and gets everybody's attention, it also brings the shysters in its wake.
Oh, of course. And I think what's happened is the people who were best able to present this fake reputation and basically create this illusion of a large diversified balance sheet, or create this illusion in the same way that the woke and ESG types will do this like a distraction. They will sort of talk about all this ESG and wokeism while at the same time, they're often guilty of some of the things that they purport to be against, right? The classic example is the whole people who go fly to Davos in their private jet, but you and I, Tom, we're not meant to fly around on jets. We're meant to just stay put where we are, right? It's the same kind of thing that sometimes these people are guilty of the thing that they accuse other people of.
Well, so swan.com is where people can go for that's your company?
Yeah, I work with swan.com. I started off as an advisor. I'm now an employee. But basically, swan.com is where people can go to buy and learn about Bitcoin. We have a range of different products and offerings. So whether you are just an average person buying some Bitcoin, whether you're a high net worth, we have a division for you. It's called Swan Private. If you are a business and you want to stack sats, or if you are looking to, let's say you're an employer and you want to give a business benefit plan for your employees so they can earn, let's say, $50 of Bitcoin a month and you want to give that as a benefit, there's all kinds of different aspects. We have an advisor platform also. We recently came out with an app. So we have a Swan Bitcoin app. And we also now host an annual conference, which we've recently had. It's called Pacific Bitcoin. We just had it in LA. It was fantastic. So that's going to be a regular thing, which we'll have ongoing.
Excellent. Excellent. Okay. And then your podcast is, I think it's easy to remember the name.
Yeah, of course. So it's called the Stefan Livera Podcast. You can find me on Twitter at Stefan Livera.
So StephanLivera. I'll have all this stuff at tomwoods.com/2244. All right. Well, we have to watch this closely because who knows what information could come out. The whole Kevin O'Leary connection is very interesting to me because I find him entertaining on Shark Tank, but there's something slippery about him. There's something very cozy up to the establishment about him.
Right.
Put me off.
I'll give you one quick take there because I think he basically came in a bit of a Johnny come lately to the industry and then came in shouting about how regulation and regulatory clarity would open the floodgates. And what we saw is this VC investor dynamic where they wanted to be able to have quick and short liquidity, right? VC loves being able to get these tokens in earlier rounds at, say, call it 9 cents, and then dump them on retail for 25 cents. And so, yeah, it really, I think personally, kind of rubbed me the wrong way about how he came in and was shouting and wanting regulation. And now that he's the one who was investing in FTX and it went down, now he's sort of crying foul. It just seems a bit off.
Yeah, something odd is going on. Well, anyway, tomwoods.com/2244 will have all the Stefan Livera links. And I'm looking forward in a few months to seeing you in Dubai when we're passing through. I like being out of the country and yet having contacts everywhere I can have lunch with, because for one thing, that's a lot of fun. And for another, they can put in the work of researching a restaurant. I don't have to.
Yeah, well, I'm looking forward to seeing you, Tom. It'll be a pleasure, and thank you for hosting me.
Oh, it's absolutely my pleasure. And incidentally, let's see, if it's late February, first couple of days of March, what Fahrenheit temperature can I expect in Dubai?
I'd have to look that up.
Like in the so-called winter. What is your so-called winter like over there? I'm just curious.
So in Celsius, it's between 25 to 16. That's high to low.
Oh, isn't that funny? You're so European / Dubaian now. That,
well, I'm an Australian. So I'm an Australian, so I think in Celsius, you know.
You so think in Celsius?
Yeah, but 25 degrees Celsius is 77 Fahrenheit, so...
That's doable. I guess I thought it would be oppressive all the time.
Oh, in February, no. It gets really... What you're talking... That time is more like May, June, July, August.
Oh, fantastic then.
Yeah.
Okay.
So it's going to be great weather.
Saying, oh, this restaurant's a 15-minute walk from your hotel. I thought, I'll be dead after walking 15 minutes in Dubai.
Oh, no.
But if it's going to be very pleasant, then that's another matter.
Yeah, of course. I wouldn't have said that otherwise. I would have thought,
Well, I thought maybe after living there for a while, you built up an amazing heat tolerance or something. I don't know.
Maybe a little
anyway,
bit.
Anyway, yeah. Well, looking forward to that. And again, folks, I fully endorse Stefan Lavera and his work. So definitely check out tomwoods.com/2244. All right. Thanks again, man. I appreciate it.
Thank you, Tom.
All right, everybody. Thanks so much for listening. Tomorrow, Michael Heiss joins us for What the Heck Should We Do? We're going to have a little bit of a strategy call with Michael tomorrow. So make sure and tune in for that. And remember, I shower you with gifts when you support the Tom Woods Show. You will not believe all the goodies you get as a supporter of the Tom Woods Show. So if you haven't looked at them yet, or you haven't looked at him in a while, check out supportinglisteners.com. And you'll feel like, oh my gosh, I'm supporting him, but he's also supporting me. What a wonderful symbiotic relationship it can be. So check out supportinglisteners.com. I'll see you tomorrow.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.